Hi, welcome to the Movies You Forgot
Hi.
Podcast.
Oh.
Hi.
Hello.
This is the show in which we talk about the movies or films we forgot we'd even seen in the first place, but we have been bombarding you with special after special. And today, it's a cinema special. Me and Joe have been to the cinema. We've seen 28 Days Later. This podcast is brought to you by Estrella and a pot noodle. It's 11:20 at night. I'm buzzing. Joe's buzzing.
It's also brought to you by Haagen-Dazs Belgian chocolate. Half of one. Just want to make it clear. Half of one. Although I might eat the other half later.
This is out today, and you took me in your bosom. We don't get to see flicks together.
No.
We went to the cinema. We had a little cheeky burger.
It was actually an honest burger.
Yeah, it was honest.
It wasn't cheeky.
Some pretty standard horror trailers, a lot of horror trailers, and you leant in and you whispered to me, you said, why are there so many horror movies these days?
Yeah, why?
And then we rated the horror movie trailers based on like an eyebrow raised.
Yeah.
Or not.
I can't remember any of them, but I'll tell you, two of them seemed really boring. One of them seemed quite interesting, but all of them together caused me to think, does every horror film have to like relate to something in that the DRSM or whatever they call it, that book of mental illness? Because it does seem as though they're all themed around things. I can't wait for like the anorexia horror film where the thin ghost crawls out of the woman and then I don't know, eats her?
Yeah, well, the three horror movie trailers that stood out that were there's Dave Franco and his wife, Alison Brie, in a neon-produced flick called Together, and that looks like a very fun body horror flick about dysfunctional couple who bond and, like, join.
Yeah, that was about codependency.
But at the same time, it did look kind of almost quite derivative of all that kind of art house horror.
Mm.
And then there was The Black Phone 2, which is the sequel to The Black Phone 1.
Yep.
A very poor, not scary film. And that just looked really silly.
Yeah.
With Ethan Hawke slumming it some more. And then there was Weapons from Zach Cregger, who directed Barbarian, which you won't have seen. That was the one with the kids and Josh Brolin. You like that one.
And you're forgetting one as well.
Oh, and there was one from the guys who directed Talk to Me or Talk to Her. I've not seen that. That one looked particularly horrible. Sally Hawkins in it.
Sally Hawkins. You're forgetting another one, though.
What was the other one?
Well, there was the one that was about disruptive impulse control and conduct disorders, where there was the oppositional defiant disorder woman and the conduct disorder man, and together they made a baby that had like a combination of those mental illnesses, and then the baby was like learning about those mental illnesses through a horror film. And yeah. Then there was another one you forgot about as well.
Oh yeah, is it the one? It's the one about the person with ADHD.
Yeah,
and the other one with agoraphobia.
Yeah,
the person with ADHD just goes into the person with agoraphobia's house and really insists that they have to come out. Because, like, they're fixated on it. Is that what ADHD is? they get fixated on it. And the ADHD monster, it's an ADHD monster.
Yeah.
But humanized. And they really force the agoraphobic person to get out. But then they live and they love and they learn. And someone's skin is flayed off them at some point.
I think that they show that in the trailer, which was a bit weird. Seems like it's giving away a lot of the film. The one I thought looked the best, though, was the one about the guy that had phobophobia. You know what that is, of course, don't you?
Fear of having fears?
Yeah, it's fear of fear. And that film looks like it's about a guy who is afraid to watch horror films, but he has to get over it by watching horror films. And that's how he gets past his phobophobia. Or does he? Because the trailer doesn't show you everything. It just shows you he's watching all these horror films and it's also horror itself. But he's learning about his mental illness as he goes through the horror. And in that sense, it's not just a throwaway trash movie. it's a throwaway trash movie that also talks about like a mental illness, and so it will win awards.
Well, they don't win awards, they just win fan favour. Like, there's one of them's made by Neon, one of them's A24, one of them's Blumhouse. They all feel very similar.
Yeah.
But they're all heightened, arty, wonderfully shot, but at the same time got a silly horror nub. And people it's obviously cheaper to make. They don't have stars, although Weapons has got Josh Brolin in, who is technically a star, but they don't really have stars. You can make them for a budgeto, for like, I don't know, 25, 30 mil.
Sure.
Slap on 10, 15 mil for the marketing. And these guys, these A24s, they're so good at viral marketing and social marketing.
These A24s?
Yeah, these A24s. The days of me saying, oh, you know, they just, you know, just double what they spent to make it to spend on marketing. The days of me being able to say that are numbered, which is a shame because it was one of my favourite things to say.
Oh, you really did like saying that, didn't you?
Yeah, I know. But anyway...
What can I say?
Oh,
can I say that I expect there will be spoilers in this episode about the film?
Yeah, no, but I was going to... Joe, I was going to say that too, actually.
No, I know you were, but I was using it as a means to make a joke.
Oh, okay.
Which you've now interrupted.
Oh, sorry.
So I won't... No.
What was the joke?
So I won't make it anymore. No, I'm a gunslinger now.
No, because my joke... Because I felt that you were opening the door for a joke for me, and I thought, I've got to go through that door.
Wait, let's do our jokes at the same time.
Well, no, my joke was like me...
I want to do mine at the same time as you.
No, but the essence of my joke was the fact that I hadn't interrupted you.
Right, so you do that joke now, and I'll do my joke as you're doing that.
Okay.
On three?
Okay.
Okay, one, two, three. But one big spoiler of... Are you not doing yours?
No. The whole thing is I need you to speak for a bit for then me to interrupt you.
But I've just done that. So you imagine that you're interrupting me and then I'll do mine at the same time and that way it's even.
No, but I've already done my joke. So then now you can do your joke.
No, I know, but you do it again and then I'll do mine at the same time.
But my joke doesn't... It's already done. It's me being in... It's me. It's the joke's on me because I can't bear that you said the thing about spoilers before me.
Listen, come on. Just pretend that you haven't already done it and do it again.
Okay.
And just keep talking about until I'm finished talking, okay?
Okay.
And three, two, one. But one big spoiler,
yeah, one
of course,
big spoiler is that Joe can't watch a movie without being...
It's so hard.
No. Right, so just do your... why are you getting...
Wait, we can do it again. Don't copy what I'm saying, though, because it confuses me. Just take your earphones off and say what you were going to say anyway, okay? Yeah?
Okay.
Take them off now.
Okay.
Put them back on in 30 seconds, yeah?
When you say 3, 2, 1, I'll take them off when you say one, okay?
Okay, 3, 2, 1...
So the whole thing with like, oh, yeah, like, no, I was going to say there were spoilers that, you know, it don't beat me to the punch about, I wanted to tell people that there are spoilers. You know, I want people to see the film before they see the film. I care. Was that 30 seconds?
That was great, man. You did a great job. Well done.
Right, okay.
Adam is the host now. The dynamic works better when Adam is the host. Adam prefers to be the host. And Joe prefers to be the participant. It's better overall when Adam is the host and Joe is the participant. Let it never be spoken of again. The ghost. 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 The ghost.
28 years later, it's the third flick of the 28 days later series. 28 days later, 28 months later, and now...
Weeks. Not months.
Oh, 28 weeks later. They missed the 28 months later slot.
No, nothing happened 28 months later.
Danny Boyle, not interested. Alex Garland, not interested. And these are the guys.
Lazy.
Director Alex Garland. Director Danny Boyle. writer director Alex Garland. They have been off for bigger and better things.
Sorry,
and
writer director Danny Boyle as well. I think you'll find
he's not a writer.
He's written stuff.
No, he hasn't.
He wrote the fucking Olympics, mate.
He's not a writer.
I don't know. I assume he's written something.
He's not
just
written
check.
Anything. Oh, don't check. Look, this is supposed to be quick.
It is going to be quick.
He works like John Hodges. Always
he
writes
works
his
with
scripts.
Great writers.
He works with great writers. He's a guy. We've discussed this. He picks great collaborators.
Do you know what? He's got zero. Don't worry. Don't worry. I could hear that you were worried that he was going to have a writer credit.
I'm not worried.
I know you were worried that he was going to have a writer, and that's why you started panicking and flailing around. He doesn't have any writer's credits because he knows that writing is the lower art form. Directing, that's the real thing that matters. That's where art actually happens.
Yeah, you know? That's the challenge. That's the challenge to actually bring something to life. Of course, Alex Garland, he can do both. You know,
well,
Danny Boyle, he can only do one.
He could do both.
No, he can't.
He could do both.
Sorry.
He just chooses not to waste his time doing the other one. He didn't need it to get into the business, you know? People could just see that he was special off the bat.
I mean, Alex Garland is a better director than Danny Boyle.
That's just not true. that's outrageous.
Let's
man.
Just not get waylaid. I was just saying that.
I don't want to get waylaid.
That's just a fun thing for me to say.
That wasn't fun at all. I didn't find that fun.
I think they both got. They both swing for the fences, and I like them in different ways.
Danny Boyle definitely swings for the fences, for sure.
And so does, sure. If you've seen Men, you'll know that Alex Garland swings for the fences.
I've seen Men. I see them every day, mate. They're everywhere, and I'm sick of them, let me tell you. They're constantly saying shit I don't want to hear. I hate looking at them. I hate being around them. I hate smelling them. I hate them like being near me on the underground. And I'm just absolutely fucking sick and tired of them. You
the
know?
Film
and their ideas.
The film Men.
Oh,
Alex
I haven't
Garland.
Seen that, no,
no, of haven't course you haven't.
It. Who directed that one?
Alex Garland.
Oh, well, there you go. That's why I haven't seen it.
Yeah. A colleague of mine was saying that Alex Garland doesn't know how to end his films, and I wanted to crush his skull, but he's senior to me, and so I couldn't. I just had to nod along and go, yeah, no, that's interesting. That's an interesting perspective. I don't agree with that. But anyway, let's talk about something else now before
about my pay rise.
Yeah, which hasn't happened.
I'm on drugs!
And do you know what? I'll be honest with you. We haven't discussed to each other what we thought about this film. You were giddy as a schoolboy coming out of this.
I ran home. I was like, let me run home. Let's do a podcast. We didn't plan this. I was like, let me get home. We'll do this podcast immediately.
Yeah. And I was a little bit more circumspect. There's a final sting at the end of the flick, which we won't reveal.
Sure.
But I didn't particularly care for. Uh-huh. You thought it was, yes, please. Do you know what? I don't think Alex Garland has come up with some interesting ideas and an interesting story. I don't particularly think it's his. I think it's probably one of his weakest scripts he's ever written.
Really?
Really? Yeah, there's some really obvious writing in there.
Wait. Can I? Because we haven't done this. A group of survivors of the rage virus live on a small island. When one of the group leaves the island on a mission into the mainland, he discovers secrets, wonders, and horrors that have mutated not only the infected, but other survivors. That's 28 years later. Okay.
That's so vague as to not really tell you anything about the flick. It stars Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
There you go.
Jodie Comer.
There you go.
Ralph Fiennes.
There you go.
It's 115 mins.
Sure.
I like that runtime.
Yep.
So... the scene where it's fairly early on, it's maybe 10 minutes into the movie. It's the main premise is that it's a dad and a mum and their 12-year-old kid Spike, and the dad is Aaron Taylor Johnson. They all live in this community on this little island, and he's going to take Spike out onto the mainland. And the wife, Jodie Comer, she's having a tough time of it. Okay, she's sort of bedridden. And we're not really sure what's going on with her. Aaron Taylor-Johnson is obviously a macho man, and Spike wants to live up to his macho man daddy's hopes and dreams for killing zombies. And he's going out on his first mainland mission. We know that. And then the boy's in his room, and he's getting his gear ready, and there's a little toy figure on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And the boy takes the toy figure and he holds it and he goes to put it in his bag. He wants to take this childish thing with him on this masculine journey he's going to go on. And then I'm watching it, I just think, well, I know he's going to put this back now. He's going to pick it up to pretend because he needs it because he's still a child, and then he's going to put it back because it's time to put away childish things. And what does the kid do? He puts the toy back and he leaves it.
Yeah.
And he's like, it's like, it's
so
just,
is your criticism that you're too clever for cinema?
It's not clever.
That,
it's
that
just,
you're too observant for mainstream films now.
It's just a beat that I've seen a million times, and like, yes, he's showing through action something which is what cinema is, but it just feels like, I mean, my Garland, he's coming up with a scene that's a little bit more interesting to convey that.
This is your Garland.
No, it's not my Garland. I think I've got a different Garland.
About? Oh my God. Right. This is galling, okay? There's two things I'm going to say. This is galling. That's the headline. Two sub-items here. The first is...
Gall.
Fuck off of you and your... This isn't my Garland, it's a different Garland. That's all nonsense. This is Garland. He's written it, okay? If you don't like it, you don't like something that Garland's written, and that's absolutely fine. You're a Garland guy, but yeah. That doesn't mean that, you know, whatever. Two, we haven't even said anything about the film yet. This is the first thing you're saying about the film. You're nitpicking one tiny nothing scene near the beginning of the film that I'd almost forgotten about because it's completely irrelevant to the movie, and it's the only time I can think of where something a bit obvious happens. You've gone straight in and said that before you've said anything else about the film. That says so much about you, man. That just says about you, because you think I loved it and you want to take it down before
no,
I've even said anything.
I don't. That was just my first. That was my first feeling, because it's such an early scene, and I thought I was going to get a smarter film with smarter scenes and smarter dialogue.
This movie's smart.
But there's some really interest. There's a really interesting idea at the center of that. Aside from these really obvious dramatic scenes I've seen a million times, there's this really interesting idea of a community on this island, and you think you're with the heroes, and then what's really fun is that Garland and Boyle are playing with the idea of actually these people are a bit mad. You're in with this tight-knit community who've kept themselves shut off from the world, you know, with marauding zombies on the mainland for 30 years. And they've got these slightly skewed, protective, weird values. And it's not celebrating that. And it just sort of slowly unfurls.
That is fun. There's a lot of fun subtlety. I think that's why I find it... galling that you would raise that like obvious visual early scene, because I think what this film does really well is be clever and subtle most of the time, and do it when it matters. So it's obvious to me from watching the film that what's interesting to Garland and Boyle, or Barland, as maybe we can call them, Goyle, let's call them Goyle.
Oh, I just made me think of Harry Potter. Yeah, get me onto Harry Potter.
What's interesting to Garland and Boyle is how the world has evolved after 28 years. That's really fun. Like, what would this community be like that's living on the island, that's afraid of the mainland, that has this causeway attached in order to reach the mainland that's only accessible at low tide, that is resource shy, where there's no doctor, where there's no sort of medical supplies really, and where they're kind of living in some means a subsistence lifestyle. They don't really seem to have that much space to do farming. And so there are ways that this is explored. One of them is, as you say, Adam, there are nods to like unusual tonal elements around the island, around the community. There's obviously the celebration of killing. So when the boy returns from his first voyage onto the mainland, it's been traumatic for him, but he's immediately celebrated in this way that seems kind of grotesque and over the top, because you see the film through the child's perspective. He's celebrated by the rest of the community for essentially becoming a man and for killing for the first time. And so I think that's really interesting, along with the fact that Mummy, who's played by Jodie Comer, is upstairs in bed, is sweating, and is clearly ill. It's unclear at the beginning of the film whether she has a physical or a mental illness. It is clear that there is no real means of managing that beyond just on a day-to-day basis. So I think that that raises really interesting notions about the society that they live in and their approach to values and family values, and do these things survive in a post-apocalyptic world? I think the Aaron Taylor-Johnson character, who plays the dad, is really interesting and is really multifaceted, because on the one hand, as you describe him, he is this kind of macho man. He wants to teach his son, who is described as younger than average, to go to the mainland for the first time. He's only 12 or 13. He wants to teach his son early how to kill and how to defend himself, because he obviously sees those values as the most important for survival in this world. But at the same time, his wife and mother are still living upstairs. He's still looking after them. He's always making breakfast. He's there. He's being there, being a father. There are one or two things that happen throughout the film that show him in a slightly different light. And I think the film, you know, in some ways, like, because it's shown through the perspective of the child, it treats him a little bit unfairly. You could make an argument that he's doing quite a good job and in a tricky position.
That's a really good point, Joe. I think I did feel that, you know, as a father, the mother is certainly gets put on a pedestal in this flick, and mothers should be put on pedestals, sure. But the Taylor Johnson character is a very present father. He's got a tough time of it. A poorly wife, a son who's stepping into manhood. And sure, Taylor Johnson, he makes some mistakes.
I'm not sure that I would even categorize them as mistakes. I think that's the point I'm making. Like,
what does he do with that young lady down an alley? Is possibly
well, of course. But throughout the film, you're not really that sure until a bit later on. But whether the illness, the ailment that Mummy has is physical or mental, it clearly is having mental side effects, and it's also clearly been going on for some time. It's normalized as part of the home, so it's obvious that he doesn't have a consistent or ongoing, certainly a romantic relationship with his wife, with the mother anymore. It's a carer's relationship. And now we're entering, okay, so if there are questions of infidelity here, now we're entering a very interesting area, right? Where this is something that happens today. Obviously, there are people who would be in marriages or long-term relationships where one partner becomes a full-time a carer for the other, and where the romantic nature of the relationship sort of secedes from the relationship. It becomes one more practical, one more functional. At what point does love allow someone to seek comfort elsewhere? I don't know. Like, I think that's something that happens, that's relatable, that happens today. It's very interesting to explore that in a post-apocalyptic scenario. I think that's really fun and quite subtle. And I would say also that there are nods that relate more directly to the plot and on the mainland that relate to the evolution of the infected or the zombies or whatever, that are also explored very subtly, that aren't really brought to light. The characters never talk about them. It's almost frustrating that, like, you want them to talk about it in the plot and they don't. My assumption is that they're setting stuff up for film two, film three, because this is the first of a trilogy. But I think that's why I was frustrated that you said that thing about the obvious bit at the beginning, because the film is very subtle in a very clever way. And that's Garland, right? That's Garland all day. And Boyle.
And the Oscar goes to Cameron Crowe for Almost Famous.
This is the first Academy Award and third nomination for Cameron Crowe. In 1996, he was a double nominee for Best Picture and Original Screenplay for Jerry Maguire.
Oh, man. Hi, everybody. I'm Cameron.
Thank you.
mean, you're going into this film thinking Aaron Taylor-Johnson is the hero of this flick. Mm-hmm. And he is a very interesting three-dimensional, what's the word?
Character.
Character, but yeah, who's got faults.
Right, he's flawed.
He's flawed, that's it. He's a flawed character. And then also he disappears for the whole back end of the movie.
Yeah.
Which again is
unexpected.
Like the way that the script is structured feels slightly offbeat and interesting. And then also the way that Boyle directs it, we haven't really talked about Boyle's direction. The first like 15 minutes, he's throwing all kinds of shit at the cinema. Like there's the night vision in there. There's like old clips of Laurence Olivier as a knight. He's got that poem, the Kipling poem from the trailer playing.
There's the Teletubbies. There's the scene at the very open of like 6 to 9 blonde Scottish children being demolished by zombies, which is pretty brutal, right at the head. And there's a lot of like other multimedia stuff. I love the tone. I love Boyle tone though. I think Boyle is just living on my wavelength, you know?
Yeah, he doesn't just want to do the same old shit. He swings for the fences. And I don't think it necessarily all works, but he certainly doesn't want to do fast zombies again, because you begin in the first zombies you meet, and they never say zombies. They always use the word infected, but it's a zombie movie.
Sure.
They're really slow, large, kind of these crawling beasts on the ground. And you definitely feel like Garland and Boyle are thumbing their nose at you. It's like, oh, you want, you know, we invented fast zombies. We're not going to give you any more. Well, maybe later, sure, but not now. And it's a nice little riff on it. And they've probably thought, oh, how could you have such creatures? And they've figured it out. They don't really explain it in the film, but why would they bother?
Sure. You don't need to know.
So, you know, it's not a shit script in that regard.
TLDR, I love the movie. I love Ralph Fiennes.
Yeah.
I think the kid is really fucking good. We haven't talked about him at all, but I think the kid is really, really good. He's in almost every scene. He does a great job. He's super believable. And there's actually one really funny scene where the cinema, you know, tittered along.
No, I think there was more than a titter.
It was more than a titter. It was a laugh.
It was a big old rolling laugh right in the midpoint, and it was very well timed.
That was lovely. And also... fucking Boyle, but I just love Boyle's directing style. It really it really chimes with me. I'm glad that the movie exists. I was happy to watch it with you.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
Should we say what happens at the end of the film? We've spoiled so much.
Yeah.
So at the end of the film, Spike the little lad, he's hunting, he's living by himself. Gorgeous shots, and then he's getting chased by some infected. He kills one, he kills another, but it doesn't look like he's long for this world. And then who should appear?
The guy from Skins,
Jack O'Connell. Everyone's chatting about from being the vampire. He's been a vampire recently in Sinners.
Oh, was he in that?
Yeah, and he pops up. This will be all over TikTok, I imagine, because they love him. And he's got blonde hair and loads of jewelry on, and he's wearing a tracksuit, and he looks like Jimmy Savile, and he's actually cool. And then he's joined by a team of people who all are dressed in the same way, and they're called the Jimmies. Did you know this?
I didn't know that. I mean, I knew that one of them was called Jimmy.
Right, they're called the Jimmies because there's also a shot earlier on in the film where did you notice it on the side of the church?
Yeah.
Right, very nice. That was nice.
Yeah.
But so anyway, these guys come out of nowhere. He's got a weird... Is he Scottish? Is he supposed to be Scottish?
I don't really know.
I think he's supposed to be Scottish because it's him. There's a boy at the beginning. There's a prologue. And it's the grown up boy from the prologue,
right?
They look mad, and then they then dispatch the infected, like, in a very over the top, what I would say borderline comedic fashion.
Sure. It wasn't borderline. It was. I think it was supposed to be funny.
Well, so this happens, and then Jack O'Connell talks to the kid. He's like, "Let's be friends," and then they shake hands, and that's the end of the film. Danny Boyle said when he read the script that's the scene that just blew him away, and thought, "This is horror. This is taking things to a new level." And he said it was the best thing he's ever read.
He said that final scene was the best thing he's ever read.
Yeah. And that's why he couldn't wait to make the movie. And that's like the Jimmies. The Jimmies are going to be the thrust and the nub of the next film.
Of course, yeah.
And I probably won't be there for it.
Really?
It looks fucking it was stupid.
The thing is, what I really liked about it is that everything about it seemed stupid. And yet for some reason, I really liked it. I was totally in. I thought Boyle, Garland... I trust you guys. I'm going to suspend my disbelief. I'm going to allow myself to fall into this and perhaps enjoy it. And that's all it took for me. Let me tell you, though, you know, because we just mentioned Jack O'Connell there, who you said was in Sinners as well, and then shows up in this movie. I was actually looking at this for a different reason the other day. I was looking at the cast of Skins, which, for anyone not from the UK listening... It was a sort of teenage TV teen drama series that ran for a few different seasons, and it was around, like, I don't know, 2007 maybe? Yeah, 2007, until it ran until like 2013. But there was one first big popular series. It was aimed at kids who were maybe around like 14 to 16, 17 years old. And the hit rate for the cast is astonishingly high. Did you watch it? Were you a bit too old for Skins, maybe?
I was too old. I would have felt a bit... yeah, it just felt like youth wank on E4. I just can't imagine it being any good.
Yeah. No, that's fair. And I think for any adult, it was that. And I don't know how good it actually was. I remember thinking that it was quite fun, but I was a teenager when I was watching it, really. I was probably about 16, 17 years old when I was watching it. But let me tell you, here's the hit rate, okay? So the star of it at the time, the first season, was Nicholas Holt, who was already famous because he'd been in About a Boy. But he was the only one that I think was well known at the time, and he kind of led the series.
But yeah, he needed cred.
Oh, he needed cred.
Like, he could have easily disappeared.
He was the geeky kid from About a Boy, and he needed a vehicle that was going to help audiences reimagine him as like a hot, cool guy. And I remember when I was watching it, even as a teenager, thinking, but this is the stupid kid from About a Boy. He's not cool. The show makes him seem like he's the coolest guy. He's everyone's favorite. They all the girls want him, whatever. And I'm like, I don't know. He seems just like a kind of the gormless kid from that stupid movie. Anyway, it obviously worked out for him. So that's Nicholas Holt, who's gone on to do many, many things since then, but admittedly was already famous. Then there's Joe Dempsey and Hannah Murray, who both went on to have fairly sizable roles in Game of Thrones and have appeared in other British TV.
Never heard of them.
But you will recognise them both. There's Jack O'Connell, who is now the one that we're discussing, who's in this movie and who is in Sinners. And I guess it's taken him a bit of time to find his feet, but he's there. There's Dev Patel, who played Anwar for 18 episodes in the first season, and again was like, it was one of the characters in that gang that was sort of uncool and like, you know, a bit feckless and stupid and whatever. Like, he's obviously gone on to be probably the most famous and the most talented of the gang,
and most handsome.
And then there are a number of other, like, there's one or two of them that stopped acting after that and just didn't do anything else again. And then the hit rate for the rest of the middling ones, that so many of them are still working, mostly in British TV, some in theatre. They're still with projects every year. Like, I just think whoever cast Skins did a great job.
You're missing Kaya Scolidario.
Oh, Kaya Scolidario. You mean the one that plays Effie? What else has she been in that wasn't? Oh, I guess she was in
She's in loads of stuff.
Oh yeah, The Maze Runner.
She was really good in the crocodile flick called, I don't know, Crocodiles, whatever.
And she was in The Gentleman, that Guy Ritchie Netflix series.
Yeah, she should be in more stuff. She's really good. She was really good in the crocodile film. But everyone just wants to talk about, you know, the male actors.
really good in the crocodile film, though, was she? She was in all the Maze Runner movies, and I wonder if that's just the Maze Runner just didn't really take off, did it? It wasn't really.
Well, you know, it finished the series.
Yeah,
you know, they went through all the books. You know, so Divergent didn't get that.
Apparently, she's in Moon.
Yeah, I saw that on. She can't be. She must be like the kid.
One of the kids
on the video.
Sure.
When he's calling back, like, because there's only one. There's like three characters in that, and it's. Two of them are played by Sam Rockwell.
Well, she's credited in Moon. You know.
Yeah, because she'll be on the video screen. That doesn't mean she was in Moon.
All I'm doing is telling you she's credited in Moon.
Stop saying she was in Moon.
Listen, mate. I know you like to say that Moon is like one of those films that only has one person in it, but you're forgetting that she was in it as credited, and also you're forgetting that Kevin Spacey's in it.
And Benedict Wong was in it, and Matt Berry was in it. I'm not forgetting anything, mate.
I've got a Best Me Bacon for you, if you'd like it.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'll have to do it live.
You will have to do it live.
Okay.
But I believe in you.
Right.
Okay, here's the two names. One of them's from the movie we just watched, Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
Yep, I like that guy. Sometimes he didn't fully convince me in this film. I thought I'd like him a lot more.
And the second one is Timothy Hanks, which I think it is hard, but... I spent my tube journey thinking about this, and I've got one that I'm convinced is really, really good. I have since checked The Oracle of Bacon, and obviously I haven't won, but I got a pretty good score, Adam.
Well, Aaron Taylor-Johnson, of course, was in Kick-Ass and Kick-Ass 2.
That's true.
Kick-Ass, you've got Mark Strong, who's probably one of the bigger names. And Mark Strong has been in fuckloads. Kick-Ass 2, you've got Jim Carrey in.
Oh my God, has he been in a film with Tom Hanks? I think he hasn't, right?
They haven't, but the idea that they haven't is insane. Aaron Taylor-Johnson was also in what's it called Bullet Train, and that's got Bradley Pitt in it.
Oh my God. Brad Pitt and Tom Hanks must have been in a film together.
I don't think they have.
That surely can't be true.
Will you tell me?
They must have been.
When? They're not like the Oceans.
No, but I just can't believe that they haven't crossed over.
Coen's...
But Hanks only did the one Coen, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. That's the thing. That's why. Yeah, I stopped short. He was in The Lady Killers.
Well, you've obviously got a three there, if you want it.
Why?
Well, because you can take Brad and you can get to Tom Hanks in like one step with Brad. Is in one middle step.
I'm just overwhelmed by Brad now.
Oh, what? Right.
The step from Brad to Tom.
Yeah, there's one actor between. I mean, there's probably a few, but like I can think of one actor between them.
Oh, now I'm just like I'm staring at two giant suns and I don't know what to do. Okay, yeah. Yeah, of course. It's Leo.
Yeah.
It's Leo.
It's Leo.
It's Catch Me If You Can. Okay, yeah. So let's be quick. Aaron Taylor-Johnson was in Bullet Train with Bradley Pitts. Bradley Pitts was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood with Leonardo DiCaprio's.
Yeah.
And Leonardo DiCaprio's was in Catch Me If You Can't with Tom Hanks.
That's a really good live route. It doesn't beat mine, but I don't win either because I also did it in three. And amazingly, my route isn't the same as yours, but I do use Catch Me If You Can. I just don't use Leo. So I go from Tom Hanks, Catch Me If You Can. I use Walken.
Oh, I thought you were going to use Amy Adams. Okay. Yeah, Walken.
Was Amy Adams in Catch Me If You Can?
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
Oh.
She's the gawky girl he gets betrothed to.
Well, then this makes my route really stupid and quite funny. because Aaron Taylor-Johnson, you'll remember, is in Nocturnal Animals. But Amy Adams is actually in.
Oh!
I didn't use Amy Adams, though. I used Isla Fisher, who's the fake Amy Adams in Nocturnal Animals, to go through wedding crashers to take Christopher Walken to Catch Me If You Can to Tom Hanks. I completely forgot that Amy Adams was in Catch Me If You Can, and I could have just gone straight to Aaron Taylor-Johnson from there.
We're collaboratively, we've got the tour.
We've got the two. Which together draws Oracle of Bacon. There's a couple of different Bacon oracles. Here we go for one. Tom Hanks is in Sully with Laura Linney, who's also in Nocturnal Animals with Aaron Taylor-Johnson. So there's one for you. Apart from that, you've got Tom Hanks in The Phoenician Scheme, which is the most recent Wes Anderson film, I think, with Scarlett Johansson, who's in Age of Ultron with Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
Yeah, that's a good one. Forgot about that one.
You've got Tom Hanks in Saving Private Ryan with Ryan Hurst, who's in A Million Little Pieces with Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
Yep, that's I would never have got that.
Oh, here's your kick-ass one. You were looking for a kick-ass route. Aaron Taylor-Johnson in Kick-Ass with Adrian Martinez. Who's that? Do you know who that is?
No, that's a nothing one. I'd want like a via Mark Strong or...
Right, yeah.
Christopher Mintz-Plasse, maybe.
Yeah, okay. I think that's probably... Who's Gary Sinise?
Gary Sinise?
Yeah.
Well, Apollo... tell me the Gary Sinise one.
Yeah, you got it. Apollo 13 with Tom Hanks and Captain America Winter Soldier with Aaron Taylor-Johnson.
What? He's in Captain America Winter Soldier?
Apparently so. I don't know.
Wait.
I always like going south. Somehow, it feels like going down the hill.
Well, I just want to say one more time, I love this film. And can I say something else to you?
Yeah.
I think Danny Boyle, I don't know how he does it, but he just makes British films. Do you know what I mean? There was something exceptionally British about this film that didn't make me like it more. I just noticed it.
Well, the two heroes have Geordie accents, for starters.
There
which,
is
again,
that
is another bold thing. You're launching a new franchise, which is going to, you know, be promoted and go fairly big in America. And he's going, yeah, no, they're going to have Geordie accents.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to do about it?
How much money do you think they spent on this?
I think they shot it on iPhone. I think this would have been made for this was made for surprisingly little compared to what a Hollywood picture would usually get made for.
Oh yeah?
Yeah, I would, actually. Is it just this one?
I don't know. IMDb does have the estimated budget. Let me just double check. Because they did shoot two films at the same time, didn't they?
They did, but they would probably not factor that second one in. I think they made this for $40 million.
Well, IMDb says they made it for $60, and when I Google it, various other outlets say they made it for $75, which seems high.
That'll be both of them.
That could be both of them. But if they shot them at the same time, who knows?
They got a scene with CGI deer. I know these deer aren't really here.
Right. So would you have preferred 100 real deer, hundreds of live deer?
Yeah, like being tasered.
Yeah, that's what you want, isn't it?
I want to see an animal handler tasering all of the deer at the same time. Hello?
Hi, is that animal welfare?
Hi, yeah, speaking.
Hi, I'm calling to raise a complaint about my neighbour. I'm not sure what I can do about it or if there's something you can do. I thought I'd call and get some advice, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's what we're here for.
Okay. Bit of an odd one. He seems to have sourced hundreds of deer and stags.
Oh, dear. Oh dear.
Yes.
Oh dear.
No, yes, you're not the first person to make that joke, actually. That's come up.
Oh dear.
Right, yeah. Anyway.
And stags.
Yeah, stags as well, yeah.
How can you tell the difference?
Well, you work at the animal welfare charity. I would hope that you would know.
Well, there's a lot of animals in the world. Could you tell the difference between a male sloth and a female sloth?
Does the male sloth have massive antlers coming out of its head?
No, it's got a big dick.
Have I called the wrong number? Is this the animal welfare charity?
Yes, we look after the welfare of animals. Do you know how many animals there are in the world? And you're expecting me to know the difference? I was asking you, what is the difference?
Well,
what is the difference between? I don't know.
Well, I don't really know either. I just know that stags have a big antler
right
on their heads, and does or deer. I mean, I guess they're all deer.
Oh dear.
What I've done, I guess, is I've said the collective word for them all as a species, and then I've individually identified the male of the species. A bit like saying humans and men.
Yeah, why would you do that? Why would you flag up the male? Is that something that you like to do? You think the stag's more important somehow?
Well,
Did you think that was going to make me just snap into action? Because, you know, I see, when I look at deer, I don't see sex or gender.
Sorry,
I'm not that kind of person.
Sorry, I'm a woman.
Yeah, you can still be a misogynist.
You're calling me a misogynist?
Yeah, you might be. I don't know. It sounds like you are.
I'm not a misogynist. I was calling for advice about an animal problem. But
tell me more. I just wanted to know what the difference is. I didn't know the difference.
I'm really shocked that you don't know the difference visually between a female and a male deer.
I'm really shocked that you don't know how many animals there are in the world. There's so many.
You didn't even give me a chance to tell you how many animals there were in the world. You just assumed that I didn't know. Who's the misogynist now?
Well, I actually like to think I'm a chauvinist, actually. I'm not a misogynist. It's different.
How is it different?
Well, misogynists hate women, and chauvinists just think women are inferior. It's very different. It's not very different. It's slightly different.
Right. But wouldn't you say that thinking that women are inferior must come from some kind of hatred? Because otherwise, why would you think that? You know, that it's a hateful thing to think, isn't it?
Yeah, but semantically, I disagree. It's just saying someone's shit at something doesn't mean you hate them. It just means you think it's just trying to make yourself feel better.
You're admitting that you're a chauvinist because you want to feel better about yourself.
Yeah, I work in animal welfare. It's a dead end.
Well,
helping animals doesn't make me feel better. It's a waste of time. Who cares about animals? No one.
I think many people care about. I care about them. I'm calling to complain about someone because I care about them.
We haven't got very far.
Well, no, that's because you've all you've done is spend the last 5 minutes saying how much you hate women.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I'm calling because my neighbour, he's got a handful of deer over there that he seems to be tasering, and I was wondering if you'd be able to send someone out to deal with that, because you know, they're getting all over my garden.
Janice, we've got a job for you.
Janice?
Yeah.
Is that Janis, a Dutch man, or is that
no it's she's a new starter, a lady called Janice.
What, yeah. Is she very experienced, or...?
In life? Yeah, she's very experienced in life.
If she's experienced in life, is she? That's interesting. Because I'm sure she's very capable. I was just thinking, it's quite a big job. And the deer are, you know, they're a handful. I mean, the neighbour's using a taser. So I wonder if it's actually might be a job for a
for who? For Diane?
Diane, yeah, is Diane experienced, or
in what regard? What, in life?
Well, no, I just mean, you know, how's she with her hands? Is it is she
Well, I'm not allowed to ask that kind of thing. That would get me in trouble.
Right, yeah.
Okay. I might be a chauvinist, but I'm not a sex pest.
Well, maybe not. Who else have you got available over there? Is there anyone else that could come and get this sorted maybe today?
Jocasta.
Who's that then? Is that...
That's just one of the other team. A lady called Jocasta.
A lady. Right, right, right. Yeah. And is she... Yeah, she's... Has she been around animals a lot, has she? Or
not much, no.
No? Just, but okay.
She's keen, though. They're all keen. They're really hungry. They're like eager beavers.
Right.
I used to call them the eager beavers, but I got told off by HR because I was always looking at the underpants area when I said it.
So are you a woman?
Yeah.
You are a woman?
Yeah, I've just got a husky voice.
Do any men work there?
No, oh no, no, no.
No.
No, they don't know their arse from their elbow, men. They're worse than women. Thick as shit.